This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Gary Arnold, program specialist for the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, on an upcoming series of Zoom meetings called Knowledge is Power, Federal Policy That Impacts Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of July 7th, 2025. In a narrow vote just before the July 4th holiday, Congress approved nearly $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts, moves that disability advocates say will slash essential services across the country. The bill passed without Democratic support and was signed into law on Friday. It includes new work requirements, more frequent eligibility checks, and limits on how states fund Medicaid, aiming to offset extending the tax breaks and other priorities. The cuts begin in 2026 and will roll out over 10 years. Though disability services aren't directly targeted, advocates warn they'll bear the brunt. Home and community-based services, which support daily living needs like eating, dressing, and working, are especially vulnerable. These services are optional under Medicaid, making them likely targets for state-level cuts. Advocates also worry that the added bureaucracy will cause eligible individuals to lose coverage while states struggle to implement the new rules with limited resources. Despite White House claims the bill protects and strengthens Medicaid, disability organizations strongly disagree. Over 700,000 people are already on waiting lists for Medicaid waivers, and many service providers report staffing shortages. A national survey found that 70% had turned away clients and nearly 40% had closed programs. According to Katie Neese, CEO of the ARC, quote, "This bill puts essential support at risk for millions. Families will feel the harm in their homes, schools, and communities," end quote. A unanimous U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of a Minnesota student could make it easier for families to sue schools over disability discrimination, removing a longstanding legal barrier. The court sided 9-0 with Ava Tharp, a Maple Grove teen with epilepsy, ruling that families do not need to prove school officials acted in bad faith to bring disability discrimination cases. Her family's lawsuit can now proceed in a lower court. Legal experts say the decision could lead to greater accountability, though not necessarily a flood of lawsuits, said Ava's attorney, Roman Martinez. "I hope you see more compliance, not more litigation." While some advocates celebrated the decision, many educators said it likely won't significantly impact day-to-day practice, said Aaron Toninato of the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education. Quote, "We remain confident in the services being provided," end quote. Disability advocates see the ruling as a win, though challenges remain. According to parent advocate Stacy Klein, quote, "In theory, this is amazing. In practice, it's still a very hard road." The ruling aligns Minnesota with other federal circuits and comes amid broader concerns about special education funding and services. And finally, a federal indictment accuses a Florida businessman, Leo Gavoni, of embezzling $100 million from medical trust funds meant to support people with disabilities and injury settlements. Prosecutors say he used the nonprofit Center for Special Needs Trust Administration like a $100 million piggy bank. Gavoni's accountant, John Leo Wittick, faces charges of fraud and money laundering. The 32-page indictment outlines a broader conspiracy involving unnamed associates who misappropriated trust money nationwide. The stolen funds allegedly financed luxury properties tied to Gavoni's family and business partners. Prosecutors Prosecutors plan to seize homes linked to Givani's wife, children, and close associates, though none have been charged currently. Wittig's firm provided false financial statements showing investments in shell entities like BFG Prime while funds were allegedly siphoned into Givani and Wittig's businesses. The fraud extended to Boston Finance Group, which funneled $16 million into Big Storm Brewing, run by Givani's son, LJ. That company later collapsed amid lawsuits. Another associate, Elizabeth Sauer, accused in a separate civil suit, claims Givani gave her a 40% stake in his real estate company, Artspace Properties, through a handshake deal. She has since filed for bankruptcy. Federal officials say the investigation remains ongoing and more charges could follow. And that's the news for this week. And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by Gary Arnold, a returning guest. Gary, we were on a long time ago when you were with Access Living, but now with the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities. What a great fit for you, I'm sure. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much, Vicki. It's nice to be back. I really appreciate the invitation and excited to be here and talk, and happy to be back on the program.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. So I actually contacted you right away when I heard about this series of Zoom meetings that the council is going to be doing, one this month, actually tomorrow, one in August, and one in September. So why don't we start out, first of all, by you telling us a little bit about the workings of the council, what the council does and why it is important to people with disabilities in the state of Illinois. And then we'll get into the actual events that you're going to be talking about.
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you. I'm with the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities. That is actually a state agency, an independent state agency in Illinois. And the council is a federally mandated agency that comes out of the Developmental Disabilities Act, which that act celebrated its 50th anniversary back in 2024. So it was established in 1974, and along with the Illinois Council, we also saw the mandated creation of Protection and Advocacy Centers, which in Illinois is Equipped for Equality, and then also University Centers on Excellence in Developmental Disabilities. So those three agencies, the University Centers, the Protection and Advocacy, and the councils around the country were all mandated out of the Developmental Disabilities Act. And so those three groups work together on issues related to disability, and specifically developmental disability in Illinois. And with the Illinois Council, what we do is we have a five-year state plan, which right now we're on year three of our current five-year state plan. So we're in the midst of building information for creating our next one. And that five-year state plan kind of directs our work. In the current state plan, there is a goal about systems change, and so kind of changing systems in Illinois that will lead to more inclusion and empowerment and independence and participation for people with disabilities. And then there's also a goal on individual and family advocacy. So what that is what can we do to support the development of people with disabilities as their own self-advocates, and what can we do to support the development of family members of people with disabilities to support their their role as advocates in the state of Illinois. I
was just going to say, just to give people a sense of some of the different projects that you do fund, can you give us a couple of examples of things that you're really excited about?
We fund in the current cycle, what we do is we get a pot of federal money, and then we often have a number of subgrantees who receive portions of that money to do pieces of implement programs that would be directed towards pieces of the state plan. So we work with the Illinois Self-Advocacy Alliance, which does a whole lot of work with self-advocates across Illinois, building the pool of self-advocates, training self-advocates that go into schools to support people on transition and independence issues. We do Illinois Partners in Policymaking. Partners in Policymaking is a program that was created originally in Minnesota, but now it's been picked up by states across the country, including Illinois. And what that does is it's a kind of a six-month intensive program for individuals. Again, it can be family members, it can be individuals with developmental disabilities, it can be siblings. They go through this six-month intensive program where they learn about kind of legislative advocacy. And so the goal is, once they graduate, you know, they'll join this team of people, of other graduates, who are ready to advocate on behalf of the community.
So critically important.
Indeed. We're working with a group that's providing technical assistance to the state of Illinois on customized employment, which is a type of employment training really shaped around the individual people with disabilities to kind of learn what works for them, what's the best for them in terms of employment settings. Through that training, people will be equipped to like work with people with disabilities to go out and try to secure employment. And that really goes hand, the customized employment goes hand in hand with work that we've done over the past couple of years on the more systems change side of things. Mm-hmm. And that was working on dignity and pay legislation in Illinois. The council played a key role in that in terms of helping to give guidance on the actual language of the legislation, and then building support and raising awareness about the legislation. And what that legislation does, it was actually signed by Governor Pritzker in January of this year, 2025, that will phase out sub-minimum wage for people with disabilities by the year 2029. So now that the legislation is passed, another piece of the work that we're doing now is we're playing a leadership role in developing that transition plan. So a lot of work has to happen between now and 2029 in order for that, for this legislation to be successful. We have to equip providers and people with disabilities and employers with the tools that are needed in order to make this transition, so that in Illinois we can eliminate subminimum wage for people with disabilities.
Yeah, well, other states have done it, so Illinois can do it too, and it will hurt
absolutely
a little bit, but you know, it's worth it for sure.
Yeah.
Such great work. So let's not waste any more time on you know, what's in the past or what you're doing now. Let's talk about this event that you have coming up. What's that all about? It's called Knowledge is Power, Federal Policy That Impacts Illinois.
Exactly. Yeah, Knowledge is Power. This actually started, the idea for it came back in January or February when, you know, states around the country were seeing all sorts of things coming out of Washington, D.C., that were really having an impact on the community, and not just the disability community, but communities across the state and across the country. You saw the introduction of this reconciliation bill that was just passed on July 4th, just signed into law on July 4th, that would, you know, have a significant impact on Medicaid. We heard about things in the budget that would impact councils on developmental disabilities, protection and advocacy organizations and universities. And then we also heard about the dismantling of the Department of Education. And so that was when Access Living and the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities got together and said, okay, what can we do? What can we do to, you know, equip the community with information about what's happening and tools to maybe kind of take action to protect ourselves about, you know, with potential harm that might be coming from what is happening. And so that led to this Knowledge is Power program. And I think the first one was in March. And so we've been having them about once a month, maybe a little, some months that we have them more than once. And we, our last one was, I think, in middle June. And then we had, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, we had one scheduled for July and one scheduled for, August and September. But once the original one in July was for the 16th, but we scheduled this another one for tomorrow, July 8th, as a result of the signing of the reconciliation bill. And the general idea behind this is to do the best we can to inform people who attend these sessions about what decisions are being made on the federal level in Washington, D.C., how those are going to impact Illinois. And again, you know, are there things that Illinoisans can do in response to what is happening. So the one tomorrow, which is at 2 o'clock, I believe, or 2:30, mm-hmm. You know, will be kind of indirect response to the signing of the federal reconciliation bill on July 4th, kind of looking at, you know, from what we understand, what's in the bill, and then what will the kind of rollout and implementation of the bill look like, and what does that mean for us in Illinois.
And who will be presenting that information, and how did they get it so quickly? Because I understand that this bill was very complex.
Yeah, I was on an email exchange with somebody earlier today, and they actually told me that like a lot of their time, this person who I was emailing with, told me that their time has been consumed by reading this legislation, which is 900 pages long. Evidently, I will be the first to admit I do not read things that long that are legislation. But it will be staff from Access Living and staff from the Illinois Council who will be presenting it. And there's a lot we don't know at this point, because, you know, it was just signed. A lot of the senators and the House members who voted for or against, you know, probably didn't know every single thing that was included in the bill, and I don't think there's any way for any of us to know, to really comprehensively understand the implications of it all. Access Living's got a great policy staff. It will be our director at the council, Kim Mercer-Schlider, who will be presenting for the Illinois Council. She's got a great grasp on things. And we just kind of recognize the need to, you know, really respond quickly. And not only to present what we've come to understand over a matter of just a few days, but also give people a chance to ask questions. Because, you know, we're guessing that, you know, people might be really concerned.
I think you're guessing correctly there.
Yeah, you know, and we might not have the answers, you know, to the questions that people have. Um, and, and we might not be able to provide the best relief for concerns that people have. But you know, we also, I think, feel like there's an importance to having this outlet and giving a space for people to kind of raise these questions and put it out there. And if we can't answer it right there, we'll do the best we can to follow up on it.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that the information, just give us a sense of what kinds of information you'll be sharing?
Yeah, we'll spend a good deal, a chunk of time on the reconciliation bill, which was the bill passed by the House either late on July 3rd or around July 2nd or 3rd, and then signed by the president on July 4th. And we'll, a lot of the disability community over the past several months, when talking about the reconciliation bill, we've been focused on Medicaid. And so we'll look at, you know, what actually came out of this signed reconciliation bill and how it impacts Medicaid. Because things changed, you know, from the time it originally passed the House in May, it went to the Senate. The Senate made some changes, and then it had to go back to the House. And the House, on their second review, didn't make any changes to it. That would have delayed the process. So they signed it and passed it at the Senate version of it. So we'll look at, though, you know, and again, to the best of our knowledge, share, you know, what kind of changes will be made to Medicaid in Illinois. So a good piece of it will cover that. We'll also talk about the SNAP, that's the Federal Food Assistance Program. Mm-hmm. There's a significant changes there that is going to impact the community, and people, unfortunately, will probably lose benefits there as a result of that. So we'll talk about SNAP changes also that were included in the reconciliation bill. And then we also might talk about, you know, one of the confusing things for me that took me a little while to figure out is, you know, the difference between a reconciliation bill on the federal level and an appropriations bill on the federal level. Mm-hmm. And what was just passed was a reconciliation bill. They're still working on appropriations at this point. So we'll also talk a little bit about what we know at this point about appropriations, and then we'll also give it like kind of a timeline, because a piece of the reconciliation bill that was passed, you know, all these things happen on different timelines. Some things are going to happen sooner. Some things might not happen for and be implemented for several years yet.
Okay. Now, wasn't there language in the initial bill, or there was something I heard about councils on developmental disabilities were going to be eliminated in this bill?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And that's not the reconciliation bill. That's the appropriations bill. And that's absolutely correct. In the original blueprint, or I don't know if you call it the blueprint, but the original draft that came from the White House, from the president's office, had completely eliminated funding for councils on developmental disabilities, for university centers on excellence for on developmental disabilities, as well as the protection and advocacy organization. Mm-hmm. There has been an update to that. A new version of that budget has come out from the White House. The updated version does include funding for councils. It's a smaller amount than in the last fiscal year, but the difference is fairly minimal from what I understand. But there's funding for the councils. There's funding for protection and advocacy. I'm not clear. I can't be specific about what. There are some changes in the protection and advocacy funding. I think they have to do with voting programs. But the real blow on the updated budget is that the university centers are still not included. And so that's a very significant concern. And a lot of people are working hard to kind of find out what's going on and see if that can be changed.
So for folks who are wanting to attend this Zoom meeting tomorrow, how do they get information? How do they register to do that?
Yeah, it's going to be a webinar over Zoom, and so there's a registration link. I don't think, you know, I don't really have the link with me right now, but the best thing you can do is to send me an email, so I can give you my email address, and that is Gary, G-A-R-Y, dot Arnold, A-R-N-O-L-D, and then it's at, so the ampersand, is that what it's called?
I think that's called.
At, and then Illinois, dot G-O-V, so Gary dot Arnold at Illinois dot G-O-V. So if anyone listening wants to join tomorrow, send me an email. Just put in the subject line, sign me up for Knowledge is Power, put that in the body of the email, and I'll send you back the registration link.
Perfect. And I also put that registration link on the Disability Beat Facebook page.
So that's great.
You can go there too. And if you don't get a lot of emails, that may be why.
Okay.
You don't have to deal with all that too. So what are some, for the people who can't come, what are some of the actions that you are recommending, things that they can do to help alleviate some of these issues?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to try to stay informed the best you can. And I know that's not always easy. If, you know, people are occupied during the day doing stuff. I'm in a fortunate position where, you know, I can attend a lot of webinars about Medicaid and things like that. But a plus out of all of this is that a lot of groups have come together to work on it. And so there are a lot of resources out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's people who are really knowledgeable on these issues, who are sharing information. And so I think the best thing to do is to stay informed. And then one thing that I learned today, is that the Illinois Agency, Health and Family Services, they're the agency that, is responsible for Medicaid in mm-hmm. the state of Illinois. Medicaid programs fall under them. And they're going to be holding, I mean, they're trying to figure things out right now too, in terms of what this means. How is this going to affect Illinois? What are they going to do? But they are really on top of it in terms of, you know, trying to learn all they can. And they're really, you know, want to, pursue implementation in a way to protect, you know, people who are currently in Medicaid and utilize Medicaid. They're going to be holding, they don't have dates for it yet,
mm-hmm.
But they're going to be holding a series of community engagement sessions where they want to hear from the community about, like, what are your concerns about, you know, and, like, how can we best, you know, as we're trying to implement these things, or if we're forced to implement these things, you know, what can we do? So, for example, one of the changes is people are going to be required to verify their eligibility status as Medicaid recipients rather mm-hmm. than just once a year, twice a year now.
Oh.
So HFS and the state want to create a system that is as less burdensome as possible for, because the concern is that, you know, this will create another layer of red tape that will lead to people dropping out of the program, even people who are eligible for it.
Yeah, very scary stuff. But we are running out of time. I hope the people join the Zoom. And if you can, if they can't join, is it going to be recorded?
Yes, it actually will be recorded and then posted on the Access Living website.
Okay, I will put a link to that then on the Disability Beat Facebook page as well. Thank you so much for joining me today. Gary Arnold, Program Specialist for the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities. And thank goodness they are still there.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Vicki.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.
No, I stand.